From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, October 17th, 2016. And on this day, a Republican leader in the Maine legislature is being sued by his sister, who alleges that Andre Cushing siphoned off millions from a family corporation. Maine's top election official says Donald Trump's assertion that the presidential election is, in his word, rigged, is just not true. And Maine solar power advocates urge state utility regulators to preserve policies they say have helped the industry grow. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
I'm Barbara Caridi. Maine's Assistant Senate Majority Leader, Republican Andre Cushing, is being sued by his sister. As Patty White reports, the lawsuit, filed in Penobscot County Superior Court, alleges that Cushing has siphoned off millions of dollars from a family corporation.
Attorney Walter McKee, who's representing plaintiff Laura Cushing McIntyre, says that after poring over evidence for months, he sees a troubling pattern in which Senator Cushing fraudulently used money from a family corporation for personal benefit.
Where money has gone to Mr. Cushing, to corporations that he's had interest in, and that were directly in contravention to what the corporation was set up to do in the first place.
The family corporation was established by the siblings' late father to manage family timberland, as well as to invest in the stock market. But McKee says that Cushing took loans without approval by shareholders, transferred money into some shareholders' personal accounts, and used funds for his Senate campaign. As a result, McKee says, the family corporation that was once worth millions of dollars is essentially worthless.
What we're seeing now, at least one of the accounts, was something that went from about $1.4 million down to about $16,000.
The lawsuit also named Senator Cushing's wife and three adult children as defendants. Cushing, who's running for re-election to represent District 10 in Penobscot County, says in a written response that he's disappointed that a family disagreement has spilled over into the public domain and that it would be inappropriate to comment on the facts of the case before receiving the court briefing. Walter McKee says his client wants the money in question to be paid back.
And obviously it's not working for her to be a shareholder of that corporation. She needs to be paid the fair market value of her shares.
Cushing's sister is also seeking punitive damages. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And advocates for expanding solar power's footprint in Maine turned out in force today to call on regulators to preserve policies they say have fostered the industry's growth. As Fred Bever reports, they're also requesting that any changes in those policies be left to the next legislature.
Earlier this year, the state's Public Utilities Commission proposed reforms to a system that's allowed solar power producers to receive electricity bill credits when they put excess energy on the power grid. It's called net metering, and the excess energy credits have helped solar users by providing a revenue stream that can help offset the big upfront cost of a solar installation. Critics, including Governor Paula Page, say net metering gives solar users an unfair subsidy paid for by the rest of the state's electricity consumers. And this year, LePage vetoed a compromise measure approved by the legislature with support from consumer representatives, solar power users, and the state's utilities. Solar installers and financing enterprises say since then, uncertainty has put a crimp on the industry. Now, the Public Utilities Commission is proposing to phase out net metering credits on similar grounds, and Fortunate Mueller, co-owner of Portland solar installer Revision Energy, says that's a mistake. Mueller was among those testifying at a public hearing on the plan.
The commission moved forward based on the obviously flawed premise that some sort of back-of-the-napkin calculation of lost utility revenue is equal to cost shift. That's obviously not true. Everyone in this room understands that's not true, and building a draft rule on that basis is just intellectually lazy.
Many had similar comments, with one environmental group, the Conservation Law Foundation, testifying that the commission has badly misread the law and does not even have authority to phase out net metering. But others applauded the effort.
The bottom line is that the solar industry has benefited from significant subsidies.
Barbara Alexander of Winthrop is a former director of the Commission's Consumer Assistance Division. She says she has no problem with solar producers being paid for electricity they put on the grid, but she says they should not be exempted from paying the cost of maintaining the system's poles and wires and their administration.
That is a direct penny-for-penny subsidy from the rest of us to the solar customers. To the extent that is helping the solar business stay in business in this state, I'm sorry. If you want to get supported with subsidies like that, go to the legislature and get tax relief.
With the next legislative session less than 4 months away, solar advocates are urging the Regulatory Commission to hold off on its rulemaking because there is sure to be a renewed attempt at finding another compromise that keeps the industry growing without placing what some see as an undue burden on other electricity users. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Meanwhile, fundraising in Maine's 2nd District congressional race is already shattering records. But today, it edged even higher after Hillary Clinton's coordinated campaign said it would boost efforts here to elect the Democratic presidential candidate, along with the party's 2nd congressional district candidate, Emily Kane. A.J. Higgins has more.
During a conference call with reporters, Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook said that the efforts to win in several battleground states focus not only on the former Secretary of State, but also other Democrats on the ticket. That includes Emily Kane, who's running against Republican incumbent Bruce Poliquin in the 2nd Congressional District.
In order to make our best effort to win the two competitive congressional districts in Nebraska and Maine's 2nd Congressional Districts, we're going to be investing nearly $250,000 to turn out the vote in those two congressional districts.
Both Maine and Nebraska are the only two states that do not follow the winner-take-all approach in distributing electoral votes. Maine has four up for grabs, and in the more conservative 2nd District, where Republican Donald Trump has been outpolling Clinton, he could win one electoral vote, even if he lost the first congressional district and the statewide vote. Republican Bruce Poliquin's fortunes could also rise or fall based on the size of that GOP turnout. Poliquin's spokesman, Michael Byerly, says Clinton's efforts to get out the vote for Kane speaks volumes about who's calling the shots for the Orono Democrat.
Emily Kane will do anything to distract from the fact that Nancy Pelosi is pulling her strings and supporting her campaign with big super PAC money, including from liberal donors in California and even Wall Street interests.
Look, that's just simply not what the facts show.
Kane spokesman Dan Glick says while his candidate appreciates the get-out-the-vote effort that Hillary Clinton plans for the former Democratic state senator, the most recent campaign finance reports from the Federal Election Commission show that Kane's support is surging. According to the FEC, Kane is less than $300,000 behind Poliquin in total fundraising in this election cycle. And in the last reporting period that ended September 30th, she raised $1.1 million to Poliquin's $500,000. Glick says that's only part of the story.
Well, what's interesting about that is that the difference between support from Maine people is incredibly, incredibly large. What we saw in that report was that nearly 2,000 Maine people supported Emily's campaign, but only about 133 supported Congressman Poliquin's. And we think that that means there's a serious difference in where the two campaigns are getting their money.
Where that money comes from, says Glick, provides a direct link to each candidate's base of support.
What it shows is that Emily Kane is supported overwhelmingly by Maine people, and Congressman Poliquin is raising most of his money from political action committees and other special interests. So, you know, they can try to distract from that fact, but it doesn't make the fact any less true.
FEC reports indicate that, including spending by independent groups, total spending in the 2nd District race now stands at just under $11 million, or almost twice as much as when both candidates faced each other 2 years ago. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Coming up, Maine's top election official responds to Donald Trump's assertion, repeated in Maine Saturday, that the presidential election is rigged. Election officials across the country are pushing back against Donald Trump's assertions that the presidential election may be rigged. Mal Leary reports that Maine's top election official says elections in Maine have too many safeguards to make that possible.
Over the past few weeks, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has repeatedly said he's concerned about the possibility of voter fraud in the presidential election. He repeated the assertion over the weekend in Bangor.
The election is being rigged.
But Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, a Democrat, agrees with his Republican counterparts in other states like Iowa and Georgia, who say that it would be incredibly difficult to rig an election. That's because most states, including Maine, use paper ballots that are cast by individuals who have to identify themselves at their polling place and have their names checked off on the registration list. Dunlap says there's very small potential that someone might vote twice in different towns, but he's not seen that happen.
Sometimes concerns that there are individuals who may be registered in multiple places who might vote twice. We don't find that to be the case. I've been doing this now for about 10 years.
And Dunlap says local officials take their responsibility of safeguarding the process very seriously. He says local city and town clerks recruit local citizens to oversee the process. After ballots are cast, they are only counted after the polls are closed when representatives of both major parties are present to participate in the counting by hand or to read the tallies on the voting machines. Dunlap says no voting in Maine is internet-based, so it can't be hacked to change votes. He says sometimes local election staff go way beyond the call of duty, like in Bangor a few years ago, when a fire alarm went off at the polling place located in Bangor High School.
They refused to leave. The police couldn't make them leave. The police actually stayed with them in case anything truly went wrong, if there's actually a fire, but they would not leave what could have been a burning building. That's the devotion that our local elections officials have to this process.
Dunlap agrees with his counterparts across the country that for Trump's allegations to be true, it would require a massive conspiracy involving tens of thousands of poll workers from both parties to change the results of votes cast by millions of Americans. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And on Friday, some voters shared their thoughts about the state of the nation's politics with Erwin Gratz and his AdWatch team at Dysart's truck stop in Herman. You can see video of what voters had to say about that on our website, mainepublic.org. And over the weekend, York police responded to a 24-year-old man who overdosed on elephant tranquilizer. Sergeant John Lozanek says carfentanil is the latest synthetic opioid that's being mixed with heroin, and it's 10,000 times more powerful than morphine.
If we touch skin to skin on this, even a couple grains of, they liken it to granules of salt, can kill you if it touches your skin or if you inhale it.
Lozanek says it took 6 doses of Narcan, the opioid overdose antidote drug, to revive the man, who was treated at a local hospital and released. And water flows in the Mattawamkeag, Piscataquis, and St. John rivers have fallen to levels not seen in 80 or more years of record keeping. National Weather Service forecaster Maureen Hastings in Caribou says the low flow readings are a sign of growing drought conditions in parts of northern Maine.
Something interesting we had kind of seen maybe coming through some local social media is that the rivers are so low, people are able to walk across them, and that includes the St. John River. So, of course, that may have some issues there.
That's because the St. John forms much of the international border between Maine and New Brunswick, Canada. Hastings says she's hoping the region will get some beneficial rains this week. And here's meteorologist Paul Cousins to tell us what to expect over the next week.
Such remarkable mid-October weather, but this Indian summer for much of Maine is not without precedent. Skies remain generally clear across northern and downeast counties tonight, clouds advancing throughout the rest of Maine, showers along the western border by dawn. You'll note a broad temperature range, and much will be the case throughout this week, mid-30s north to mid-50s south coast. Tomorrow, showers expanding north and east while retreating from southern Maine by midday. In fact, it is not inconceivable that the overcast may break up a tad throughout southern York County. Temperatures range from the low 50s in the St. John Valley to the low 70s in Elliott. Wednesday will present the warmest temperatures of the week. In fact, across southern Maine, perhaps the warmest temperatures of the month. Once the morning clouds disband, sunshine will have the upper hand. Temperatures range from the low 60s north to the upper 70s far south. The remainder of the week will offer much less sunshine, a greater opportunity for showers, especially Thursday afternoon and Saturday. Yet temperatures will continue to be unseasonably mild. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Monday, October 17th, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Patty White, Mal Leary, A.J. Higgins, Fred Bever, Erwin Gratz, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mainepublic.org. I'm Barbara Caritti. For all of us here at Maine Public, thanks for listening.